Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addresses the U.S. Congress.
In the Middle East, Iran's axis of terror confronts America, Israel, and our Arab friends.
U.S. President Joe Biden talks to the nation about dropping out of the presidential election.
I revere this office, but I love my country more. It's been the honor of my life to serve as your president.
And a museum exhibition all about Taylor Swift.
So it follows chapters in Taylor Swift's career, and we highlight the eras and we showcase objects.
Today is Thursday, July 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition.
I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strobe.
The day after we defeat Hamas, a new Gaza can emerge. My vision for that day is of a demilitarized and de-radicalized Gaza.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu pledged in a scathing speech to Congress to achieve total victory against Hamas and criticized American opponents of the war in Gaza as idiots.
This is not a clash of civilizations. It's a clash between barbarism and civilization. It's a clash between those who glorify death and those who sanctify life. For the forces of civilization to triumph, America and Israel must stand together. Because when we stand together, something very simple happens. We win, they lose.
While dozens of Democrats boycotted his remarks and thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters demonstrated nearby, Netanyahu dismissed criticism of an Israeli campaign that has devastated the Palestinian enclave and killed more than 39,000 of its residents, according to Gaza health officials. Anti-Israel protesters stand with Hamas and should be ashamed of themselves, Netanyahu said, charging without evidence that they were backed by Israel's foe, Iran.
Iran is funding the anti-Israel protests that are going on right now outside this building, not that many, but they're there, and throughout the city. Well, I have a message for these protesters. When the tyrants of Tehran, who hang gays from cranes and murder women for not covering their hair, are praising, promoting, and funding you, you have officially become Iran's useful idiots.
Some of the protests near the U.S. Capitol turned chaotic, including within a few hundred yards of the tightly guarded Capitol grounds. Protesters outside nearby Union Station lowered American flags and raised Palestinian ones. Officers on streets surrounding the Capitol brawled with demonstrators, swinging batons and spraying tear gas. More now from VOA's Robin Guess.
Thousands of protesters traveled from several states and many countries to chant and demonstrate against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Kalim Hawa came from New York City.
The point of our mobilization today is to send a message that Benjamin Netanyahu is a war criminal. He's not welcome in D.C., he's not welcome in the U.S., that Israel has become a pariah state because of the way they have conducted the ongoing genocide of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
Many of the groups are protesting the war in Gaza, the number of Palestinian deaths, and the failure to secure the return home of all the Israeli hostages. Many called for Netanyahu's arrest, accusing him of war crimes. Here's anti-Netanyahu protester Lou Jane Lamasri from Damascus, Syria.
And he has the comforts of being invited to the U.S. He should be in handcuffs, he should be in jail, and he should be charged with his crimes and having to pay for his crimes against the Palestinians.
Security outside the Capitol was boosted by reinforcements from the New York City Police Department.
We We are committed to liberation!
The groups who organized the larger protests were solidly anti-Netanyahu. However, there were a handful of supporters. Jeremy from Canada gave only his first name.
So I'm on the pro-Israel side, the pro-American side, the pro-Canadian side, the pro-Western value side, and I'm against terrorists who hide beneath their civilians, start wars they can't finish.
They were vastly outnumbered. This pro-Netanyahu protester only goes by Flag Guy.
Well, I'd like to see how he plans on finishing Hamas once and for all, because I think that they are the problem. And then once that's over, we can talk about peaceful solutions.
Opinion polls have shown Americans remain deeply divided over Israel's war with Hamas, with roughly equal numbers who think the U.S. is doing too little to help Palestinians, too much, or just the right amount. Robin Guess, VOA News.
There is a report on the situation in Gaza concerning water. Oxfam, which says it is a global organization that fights inequality to end poverty and injustice, accused Israel of systematically obliterating Gaza's clean water and sanitation infrastructure. This comes as the World Health Organization Tuesday expressed deep concern about a polio outbreak in the territory. VOA's Lori London spoke with Scott Paul, Oxfam America Associate Director of Peace and Security.
What we found is the water system has been brought to its knees. It's been systematically destroyed and attacked from all sides. To give you just a sense of what that looks like, in Israel, people have more than 250 liters of water per day. Before October 7th, people in Gaza had less than 90 liters of water per day, which is less than the World Health Organization says is appropriate. Today in Gaza, people have less than 5 liters of water, and that's for drinking, it's for washing clothes, it's for washing dishes, it's for cooking, and it's for bathing. To make that real, that's less than a single toilet flush of water for all of those needs for a day. And when you put that together with an environment where the wastewater treatment capabilities in Gaza have also been destroyed and undercut, you're looking at a recipe for epidemics. And we've already seen more than 990,000 people in Gaza out of 2.2 million contract acute respiratory infections. These are life-threatening diseases that are hugely avoidable and which are now running rampant across the Gaza Strip.
What specifically does the report say about how this came to be to this dire level?
It's a combination of factors, but it all comes back to Israeli policy decisions and military activities. So on October 9th, Prime Minister Golan announced a total siege and stopped the supply of water through the Mekahot lines from Israel to Gaza.
Scott Paul with Oxfam America talking to VOA's Lori London.
U.S. President Joe Biden addressed the nation from the White House Oval Office on Wednesday night, explaining why he decided to drop out of the presidential race.
Nothing can come in the way of saving our democracy. That includes personal ambition.
The address offered the public their first chance to hear directly from Biden his rationale for dropping out of the 2024 race after weeks of insisting he believed himself to be the best candidate to take on former President Donald Trump.
The defense of democracy, which is at stake, I think is more important than any title. I draw strength and I find joy in working for the American people. But this sacred task of perfecting our union, it's not about me, it's about you, your families, your futures. It's about we the people. We can never forget that. And I never have. I've made it clear that I believe America is at an inflection point. One of those rare moments in history when the decisions we make now will determine our fate of our nation and the world for decades to come. America's going to have to choose between moving forward or backward, between hope and hate, between unity and division. We have to decide, do we still believe in honesty, decency, respect, freedom, justice, and democracy? In this moment, we can see those we disagree with not as enemies, but as friends, as fellow Americans. Can we do that? Does character in public life still matter? I believe I know the answer to these questions because I know you, the American people. And I know this. We are a great nation because we are good people.
Biden's address was carried by the major broadcast and cable news networks. He said he is passing the torch to a new generation.
In the U.S. presidential campaign, Republican candidate Donald Trump is facing a new opponent, with President Joe Biden's withdrawal as his party's presumptive nominee. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns looks at how Trump's campaign is recalibrating its approach to take on Vice President Kamala Harris.
Republicans at last week's national convention saw the mounting pressure on President Joe Biden to step down as his party's presumptive candidate. So when he did, they were ready.
If you ever wondered how Joe Biden could get the border so screwed up, remember, he had help.
With this ad, pivoting from Biden to Vice President Kamala Harris and blaming her for a surge of illegal immigration.
I've been working on this issue for a very long time.
That's the truth about Kamala Harris. She's dangerously liberal on illegal immigration.
In her first campaign event as the Democrats' likely presidential candidate, Harris was ready with a counterattack, reminding voters of her work as a courtroom prosecutor and attorney general.
And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds. Predators who abused women. Fraudsters who ripped off consumers. Cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
Harris resets a race that former President Donald Trump was leading, says Brookings Institution governmental studies expert Darrell West.
She'll be very competitive in those crucial Midwestern states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And I think she also will put some of those other swing states that have started to slip away, places like Arizona, back in very strong contention for Democrats.
For Republican nominee Trump, a new political challenger means a new derisive nickname.
I call her Laughing Kamala. You ever watch her laugh? She's crazy. You know, you can tell a lot by a laugh. No, she's crazy. She's nuts.
It's a campaign confident in beating any Democrat, says Hofstra University's Mina Bose.
Clearly, former President Trump and his campaign staff thought that President Biden was a beatable candidate. They seem to have the same views of Vice President Harris.
The change will mean some adjustments for Republicans, says West.
They're just going to have to recast the whole thrust of their campaign, which was saying Joe Biden was too old, he couldn't do the job, his family was corrupt. All that disappears now. But I'm sure they will quickly go on the attack. They will note that she came out of the state of California, which is more liberal than the rest of the country.
Trump running mate J.D. Vance has taken up that attack, blaming Vice President Harris for Biden's poor performance.
Our country has been saddled for 3.5 years with a president who cannot do the job. And that is all because Kamala Harris and the rest of the Democrats lied about his ability to be our president.
Harris says voters have a clear choice between her vision and Trump's.
Do we want to live in a country of freedom, compassion, and rule of law? Or a country of chaos, fear, and hate? And here's the beauty of this moment. We each have the power to answer that question. The power is with the people.
Initial political polling since Biden's withdrawal shows Harris narrowing her party's gap with Trump. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is working hard to shore up the loyalty of the armed forces and keep top commanders in line, days ahead of a hotly disputed election that threatens the self-proclaimed socialist's hold on power. Since taking power in 2013, Maduro hasn't hesitated to deploy troops to crush protests while rewarding senior officers with lucrative government jobs and control of key industries.
Meta says it has removed about 63,000 Instagram accounts engaging in sexual extortion scams. It has also taken down Facebook groups and pages that were trying to organize and recruit and train new scammers. The accounts were located in Nigeria.
The United Nations Cultural Agency has rejected recommendations to place Stonehenge on the list of endangered World Heritage Sites. Some people fear that Britain's plan to build a nearby highway tunnel threatened the landscape around the prehistoric monument.
In Kenya, President William Ruto nominated on Wednesday four members of the main opposition party to his cabinet. It's a promise he made in response to nationwide protests. But as we hear now from Reuters correspondent Arthe Theoperin, activists criticize the new government as a corrupt bargain.
I have this to say to Kenyans. I have heard you, and I have heard you clearly.
The opposition members, including the pick to lead the finance ministry, are allies of opposition leader Raila Odinga, whom Ruto defeated in the 2022 election. In a speech, Ruto called the new government, quote, a visionary partnership for the radical transformation of Kenya, and said he would be proposing anti-corruption and whistleblower protection amendments. Besides the four opposition members, Ruto named five members of the cabinet he dismissed earlier this month in response to protesters' demands. But activists have criticized the new government as a corrupt bargain. The young protesters behind 6 weeks of protests that forced Ruto to withdraw $2.7 billion in tax hikes said the unity government would perpetuate a tradition of leaders co-opting the opposition at the expense of the population. The protests are the biggest crisis of Ruto's 2 years in power. More than 50 people have been killed, and demonstrations have continued even after the tax hikes were shelved. Many activists are now calling for Ruto's resignation and far-reaching reforms to tackle graft. Ruto initially praised the protesters for being peaceful and mobilizing across ethnic lines, but has stepped up criticism in recent days, saying they were causing, quote, mayhem and anarchy.
Reuters correspondent Arthe Theoperin.
The world again registered its hottest day on record on Monday, inching past the previous high recorded just 24 hours earlier on Sunday.
We've had 11 months consecutive of record high temperatures. Last year was the hottest year. Things are not going down. Temperatures are continuing to rise.
That's Joyce Kimutai from the Kenyan Meteorological Department. She said what makes this year's record unusual is that the world has moved out of the El Nino climate pattern and the temperatures should be getting cooler.
Heavy rain from Typhoon Gaymi has flooded the Philippine capital, Manila, and nearby cities, forcing authorities to close schools and offices, cancel flights, and declare a state of calamity. Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones says the storm is affecting more than 13 million people.
Rescuers waded through flooded roads in Manila to save trapped residents from their homes, as heavy rain from Typhoon Gaymi caused flooding and landslides in the Philippine capital. Water in some areas is neck high. Although Gaymi did not make landfall in the Philippines, it has intensified seasonal monsoon rains. More than 600,000 have been displaced, and at least 12 people died due to the storm, according to the National Disaster Agency on Wednesday. Some evacuees sought shelter in this church.
Everything got submerged. Everything is destroyed. The flood reached the second floor of our house. All our things are ruined. Everything got wet. Nothing was saved.
President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. has ordered rapid assistance and to prepare supplies for isolated communities. The Philippines sees an average of 20 tropical storms annually, causing floods and deadly landslides. The storm was expected to make landfall in Taiwan on its east coast late on Wednesday evening, weather authorities said. It is expected to pass through the island and is likely to hit China on Thursday.
Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones. Always International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman.
And I'm Alexis Strope. A group of young African students is shooting for the stars, thanks to a program called Pathways to Space. Aerospace company Boeing and a South African science organization backed an education program that just celebrated its first batch of graduates. Vicky Stark reports from Cape Town.
Over 300 students from schools in Ethiopia, Nigeria, and Tanzania have just finished the five-month extracurricular Pathways to Space program. In this theoretical and hands-on course, the students built and tested payloads for a high-altitude weather monitoring balloon. The goal was to send up a carton of eggs and have them return to Earth unbroken. Henok Tefera-Shaul is with aerospace company Boeing, the program sponsor. He says he's proud to be involved in space industry education in Africa.
This is a sector that has a potential of transforming our continent, and we're glad to partner with those countries that have launched space programs, such as here in Ethiopia, in Tanzania, and in Nigeria.
Shaw says the program had to include 50% girls, and the program will continue to maintain this parity going forward.
And of course, in this area, the participation of girls is very important because they're heavily underrepresented. And we're also happy to see that it was a very diverse set of kids which came from all over Ethiopia.
Girl students like Helena Mulugeta say they love the program and want more opportunities.
I have participated in other programs, but nothing like this, because this has helped me apply the skills I know and the theories that I know. And it has also enhanced my knowledge in the aerospace engineering field and in other parts of space science.
Everyone,
3, 2, 1,
lift off!
The Ethiopian students marked their graduation with a high-altitude balloon launch from Sololta, Ethiopia, on July 10. After 5 hours of flight, the balloon landed in Ambo, which is 186 miles west of the launch site. Organizers say all the eggs in the payloads returned uncracked. The Tanzanian and Nigerian graduation ceremonies are scheduled to be held on July 27th, also with high-altitude balloon launches. The program is an initiative of the non-governmental organization Future African Space Explorers STEM Academy, or FASESA. Boeing and FASESA say they will be expanding the Pathways to Space program to other African countries, and starting next year, we'll have both in-person and online training sessions. Vicky Stark, VOA News, Cape Town.
And finally,
so it follows chapters in Taylor Swift's career.
Outfits, musical instruments, and other objects on loan from Taylor Swift are going on display at London's Victoria and Albert Museum in a first-of-its-kind exhibition.
We highlight the eras and we showcase objects and the eras and looks worn by Taylor across the different spaces in the museum.
Exhibition curator Kate Bailey.
I wanted to make sure that we were able to showcase costumes, but also musical instruments, objects that kind of convey her whole career and creativity. You know, drawing down into the songbook, into her sort of creative inspirations.
And she says many of the other exhibits in the museum feed off of and complement the Taylor Swift material.
There's so many synergies with the V&A and with our collections. So whether it's the sort of Victorian-inspired look for Fortnight, or, you know, we have multiple kind of references to the poets and all kinds of storytelling. So I hope she'll find inspiration from it too.
The exhibit is called Taylor Swift Songbook Trail. It is displayed throughout the V&A South Kensington Museum through September 8th.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for joining us.
For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com.
In Washington, with Alexis Strope, I'm Scott Walterman.